Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Thank you.
Next!
Okay. First things first, your exes should be blocked.
You know, acknowledging the good things and moving on.
We're not about bad vibes here.
Are you relationship experts?
No.
My pants were wet.
It ain't even about BDE anymore. It's about thank you, next energy, yeah? Everyone's got their Christmas tree up already, and I'm stressing out about finding the perfect wreath to go over the fireplace, because what's more Christmassy than that?
Very true.
I haven't done all of my Christmas shopping, have you?
Is that a joke? I don't buy anyone Christmas presents.
Oh, you're not going to get me a Christmas present?
Well, this is the thing. I know you're the only person who would kind of think I'm going to get them one, so I'm going to get you one.
You don't have to get me one, but...
No. Basically, every year...
Look at me guilting Hardy into again.
No. Every year, I've always got a friend in my life who I know that it's their thing. So out of respect, it's like, okay, I'll do it.
Oh, it's fine. You don't have to. But just in case you're listening to this, I'm thinking, do brown people celebrate Christmas? Yes, we do.
Roger's saying this because my landlord asked me after I specifically told him that I do.
Yeah, and many people have asked me if I do, and I'm just like, really, guys? Have you seen my tree? Have you seen my decorations? You know peppermint candy cane things?
Yeah.
No, sorry, the peppermint lollipops, the round ones. I bought giant ones of those that light up, and I've put them in my front garden. They're freaking banging, bruv. That's how much I celebrate Christmas, so sit back down, what you mean.
Can you take a picture, please?
Yeah, I'll take a picture. I'll do it for you. Anyway, welcome back to Thank You Next, the podcast about turning your L's into wins. I'm Raj, and this year I've already lost Whamageddon.
I'm Hardy, and I'm not as festive as Raj. You know what? I feel like you take all holidays and seasons and moods to the extreme. I feel them lightly and just... Yeah. Yesterday I was walking around North London and Islington, and it was very wintry. But other than that, like, I've got no decorations, like, not really.
You're not going to put a tree up?
We might.
Have you got one?
We're not getting a plastic tree. Not around these ends.
What do you mean, not around these ends? Is it too trendy for a plastic tree?
No, not around these ends. I mean, with my housemate, environmentally friendly housemate, we don't do no plastic.
But it lasts forever. My tree's lasted forever.
Yeah, but then I don't think it. Anyway, this is boring. This is not the environmental Christmas tree podcast. It is Thank You Next, as Raj already said. And on this podcast, we look back on the L's we've taken in relationships and in life, basically figure out what they have taught us. So we turn the L into a lesson and rebrand that failure as a win.
Just give us a job as marketeers. We're marketeers, mate.
We could do this for you if you want.
We can do this for everybody.
We can turn your L's into wins.
We can, and we will. And if you have an L that needs turning into a win, you can email us. Email address coming up very soon.
Anyway, so on today's episode, we are joined by podcasters Emma Slade Edmondson and Nicole Ockran from Mixed Up Podcast. And Mixed Up Podcast is a podcast for mixed race people and anyone who wants to better their understanding on race and identity. Mate, they've had some sick guests on.
Emma and Nicole have just won Podcast of the Year at the Blogosphere Awards. They've been featured in Marie Claire, Grazia and more, and are writing a book that's coming out in March 2023, yo.
Bloody hell.
So we're going to find out more about that. And we're also going to find out what they're saying thank you next to.
You can also tell us what you are saying thank you next to. You've got to be saying thank you next to something at this time of year. There's always something. You can also send in some of your suggestions for what we should do for our Christmas special. We're in a bit of a predicament here. We're basically thinking Christmas lessons from a movie. We did The Holiday last year, and I was talking about Love Actually, but Raj absolutely hates it.
I hate it, but we can revisit it if you really want.
I've never seen it.
It's
and
awful.
Then Raj suggested Christmas songs, which are equally as irritating/toxic. And I hate those. So we don't really know what we should do. So what do you think we should do? Please email us at hi@thankyounextpodcast@gmail.com and tell us what you want to hear. And we will make it a reality this year. Christmas wish.
Yeah, your Christmas wish will come true. If you have any ideas, do share them with us. If you're not into emails, you can slide into the DMs and follow us on socials at Thank You Next Pod. We just want to shout out Rupa, who's planning a little giveaway for our listeners with us. That's coming up soon.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. The year of Thank You Next, guys, is coming up.
Oh, my God. Our anniversary, which I'm also getting you a gift for. Don't bother getting me one back because, you know, I don't want you to feel pressured into getting me gifts.
Gift giving's one of your thing, though, isn't it? Isn't it on your...
I think it is. I think at the top was quality time, but I think it is. We also want to shout out Ravni, Aisha and Emma for sharing their Spotify Unwrapped with us. And shout out to you for being here. We appreciate you. We love you.
We also had a boy. We were his number one.
We were Ollie, a boy's number one. With. Shut up.
He was, yeah. He's the one I shared it, but I took his name out, lol.
Why did you take his name out? That, I was like, who is this mystery person?
Some people, I mean, like the attention, I didn't want it to be like, it's on us, you know?
Oh my God. But Ollie, send us a voice note, homie. Like, tell us what's going on.
Next.
So guys, we are gonna just do a very quick catch up with each other in this week's shit that's gone down this week. Hardy wants to talk to me about something.
So I was on Twitter the other day.
Right.
And what was trending? You know what I'm gonna say.
I don't know what you're gonna say. What was trending?
You know what I'm gonna say.
I don't know.
Look at me, Raj.
Oh, yeah, what?
What was trending?
What's this? I don't know what you're doing.
I'm thinking.
What was trending?
You don't know.
I don't know what. I don't...
Chloe and Tristan.
Oh, God. Again. I'm sorry. This man is trash.
I need to know your take.
Tell me what you know.
I know that he cheated on her again with a personal trainer, got her pregnant.
This is the thing, yeah? The cheating's so complex. It's not even complex. This is how we're going to break it down. This woman is 9 months pregnant or whatever. Or I think she's 9 months pregnant. I'm not sure. She is saying that she had sex with him on his 30th birthday, which is when he was posting pictures with Chloe, which was when they were together. So this is a cheating that's come out.
They're still together now, though, aren't they?
No, I don't think they are together now, but it was cheating.
As in they were together until this cheating thing came out.
No, I don't think they were. But basically...
Oh, so they're not together now?
They're not together now, but do you get it? He got her pregnant while he was still with Chloe. So, and also, there was a tweet that went around, and there were tweets that went around, because this lady who's got pregnant, are you ready for this, yeah? He offered her an amount of money that I can't recall.
Oh yeah, I've seen this.
He offered her
95k or something.
Was it 95? All right, there you go. If it was 95k, he's offered her 95k, apparently, not sure, we're not sure, to abort the baby. And he sent this weird message being like, all you're going to get is an absent father. You're not going to get money out of this because I'm a retired athlete. I'm going to retire soon.
The worst thing is, how does he think you're not going to get money out of this? Why is he taking zero responsibility for his part to play? So yeah, he's trying to pay her off. He's obviously shitting himself, but he's trying to persuade her like, I'm unemployed, so all you're going to get is unemployed, whatever the benefit is of that or something. And saying the best that you're going to get is the 85 or whatever grand it is because I'm unemployed. He's trying to do some reverse psychology.
I just think there's not a more trashier person than Tristan at the moment. And it's not a coincidence that Tristan's name goes so well with trash.
Well, she said it.
Oh yeah, I was going to tell you I went back on Hinge, but we've kind of talked about it. But I went back on Hinge and I actually matched with someone this week. And I'm really disappointed at the caliber of what I've matched with.
Let me have a look. Let me see.
Oh, right. Sorry, I need to show you the profile. I hope I don't call him by accident.
That says it all, Raj. He looks like a prick. Let me see what that first profile... Raj. Sorry, guys, I'm going to describe it. He's got a picture with loads of trophies. He's got a picture kissing a dolphin. He's got a picture with his... he's wearing a polo neck and he's got the sides flipped up. And then what was the other picture? He's lying back, like acting cool.
I don't know what it was. I just thought, you know what? I'll have a go.
No.
I've had a go. And like, basically, he's just a snob. He's just full of himself.
Raj, he looks like a twat.
I think I'm going to unmatch. I just wanted to see.
Do it now. No, actually, I don't want you to do anything.
I'm not going to regret it.
He doesn't look like a nice boy. He looks like an arsehole.
Oh my God. I just thought, you know what? Let me just see what's going on. And this was it. No chat. One of his prompts is like, oh, I want to find someone that loves music as much as me. So I ask him what music he likes. And he's like, I like dance, bhangra, and jazz. Can I just say, I think any man that likes jazz, they usually don't like jazz. They just say it to sound like they're cool and to sound different and sound like, ooh, I'm into jazz. I think it's a red flag to like jazz.
Do you think he's got the ultimate jazz soundtrack 2015 playing in his car or something.
Do you think he's got now 22 jazz?
He's got like generic jazz.
Jazz, or, it's me. I listen to jazz. Date me. Ow.
There's been once or twice where I felt like I need to be in the jazz mood, so I go on Spotify and I just put in jazz and see what it offers me. And when I listen to it, I'm like, this isn't me. But I want to be that.
There's nothing wrong with jazz, yeah. But I guarantee you, these guys that throw it around on dating apps, they don't even like jazz. They're just using it as a little thing to be like, I'm going to impress a girl. And be like, I like jazz. Shut up.
I think it's quite aspirational to like jazz.
I'll take you to a nice jazz bar, if you want. We could do that for our anniversary. Oh my God.
We could do, actually.
Yeah, I could take you to a jazz bar. Next.
So we mentioned earlier that Emma and Nicole from Mixed Up Podcast are going to be joining us today. So let's find out what they're saying thank you next to. Welcome to the podcast, guys. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, thanks for having us. Oh, thank you for having us.
Congrats on winning Podcast of the Year at Blogosphere Awards. For our listeners who might not know who you are, can you tell us a little bit about you, please?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Emma, you kick us off.
Thanks, Nicole. Pass the buck.
Putting you on the spot.
Yeah. So we are Emma and Nicole, and we host the Mixed Up podcast, which is a podcast which focuses on race and identity and conversations around this, but very much through the lens of being mixed race. Of course, because being mixed is such a huge, huge spectrum. We're so lucky to speak to people all the time because we have guests who are, you know, don't reflect our personal experiences or our heritage or our cultures. So yeah, it's really interesting. We've been doing that since 2020, the summer of 2020. So it's still quite new, but yeah, it's just been an incredible ride so far.
And you had on my absolute favourite dream guest of all time.
Who? Charles Melton.
What? No, not Charles Melton. Do you know who Charles Melton is?
Yeah, I know. Charles Melton, he's on our list.
Do you watch Riverdale?
Yeah.
Oh, she.
He's on our list.
I would literally die. If you ever speak to Charles Melton, you actually, I will pay you to just let me be on the Zoom. Like, I will. Yeah. But no, I'm actually talking about Jack Fowler, who's like second in my list of top.
You know, I actually remember you mentioning this on a podcast or one of your episodes, I think.
Do you know how much I love Jack?
Really?
I'm so glad you guys had him on. Yeah.
He was great. We just had such a laugh on that episode, you know, it was just like so fun.
Yeah.
This is what I think is so amazing about some of these episodes is it's like, although the topics we're discussing are pretty hard hitting sometimes, we always seem to manage to have a really good laugh and it's just bants as well. So yeah, it's really nice.
Yeah, he was great.
And you two met in the DMs, did you?
We did. We did. Yeah. I remember, I think it was Emma who messaged me and was just kind of like, oh, I've seen you about. Shall we get a drink?
Really? That's so forward, Emma.
Yeah, I know, right? I am that person, apparently.
How did you ask me for a drink? What the fuck?
I know that's the thing that people do, like ask people to go for drinks, but it's just like not on my radar of something I would want to do with people.
So, what, you mean the drink or the actual meetup?
Oh, I want to do the meetup.
Just not the drinks, yeah.
It's like what people say, but I'm not used to it. I still want to be like, want to meet at the park on the swing. But that's not what people do. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, me and Raj also met in DMs, which is what Raj mentioned it to me earlier, that's how you guys met.
Oh, cute.
To be honest, I was trying to coerce Nicole into doing something else because my normal work life is really much more focused on like sustainability and fashion in that sense. And so I was trying to get Nicole to come and be part of my new series. It's not new anymore, but it was at the time. Come secondhand shopping with me. So it was completely, completely separate. But we just, as soon as we met, we just started talking about this topic. And it was just kind of obvious that we needed to do something with it, I think.
And is there something in the timing of when you guys met and started? Because at that time was, you know, in the aftermath of the murder of George Floyd, and that's what everyone was talking about. Was that
our first meeting? We joked that we needed a podcast because we just would not stop talking. Like the whole, we were meant to again just meet and then like go off and do other things, but we met and we like spent the whole day together just talking. So this was like in 2019, this would have been like 2019, and so that December, we decided, okay, like, let's do a test run. Like, let's record ourselves and, like, see if we could actually do a podcast and, like, see what this is all about. So we did that, went away for Christmas and kind of just didn't, like, put it to bed. We were just kind of like, okay, like, that went well. Like, we'll revisit that when we need to revisit it. And then all of a sudden, obviously, COVID hit over that winter. And then by March, we were stuck inside. So we decided, shall we just do the podcast now? Because we've got nothing else going on. It seemed like the perfect time. We were at home. Everyone else was at home. We wanted something to do creatively. And obviously, people needed something to listen to. So yeah, that was kind of how it happened.
The two things coalesced, though, because when we, it was an incident that we released at the time, at that time that basically George Floyd had just been murdered. But at the same time, it was almost like it was needed, like there was a calling for it, because all of a sudden people were sort of clamoring, mixed people specifically, to know where their voices fit in that moment. Because I think it was quite stressful in that sense of, it was very much a like binary black and white conversation. So, you know, for those people whose mixed heritage is black and white, I think that there was quite a like strained feeling as to how they could speak to the issue, how they could speak to how they were feeling and whether they would be accepted or rejected in that. We ended up recording a pretty intense episode about how we were feeling about that, and I think people just kind of like swarmed to it a little bit.
You know what I've noticed just really randomly as I'm thinking about it? I think people used to hesitate, or people I know anyway, to even just use labels, you know, of like black or white.
Yeah,
they'd be like, there's a man over there, describe them. They are they're tall and they're this and they're that. Whereas like even just now, my housemate, she showed me a picture of the US congressman who's had a family portrait and they've all got guns in their hands.
Oh my God, I've not even seen this.
I'll send it to you on Twitter.
Send it to me. Yeah. Oh my God, I've missed something already. I'm not surprised, but I also haven't seen it. So I'm like, what? What is this? Okay.
You can imagine it though, exactly. Right? It's just like holiday, happy holiday. But she was like, it's just such a white man. She's white herself, but it's like, we wouldn't have been using these terms.
Yeah.
I don't feel like as much before.
No. Yeah, and it's that thing of like, I go into meetings now and, you know, I work on podcasts, I produce podcasts for people, and then you cast them, right? Mm. And then we're just kind of like, yeah, we just don't want another stiff white man talking about this. Mm. And, you know, the room that I'm talking to is all full of white people, and it's perfectly acceptable for me to say that now. Whereas before, I would never have been able.
Yeah.
And like, I think even companies, they're thinking about that. They're thinking about, oh, why do we always just have white men talking about everything? It was a turning point, I think, majorly.
100%. Yeah.
It's just really sad that this is what it took to make people even think about that stuff, and that they weren't thinking
out
about
of interest before, when you wanted to broach those things, did they actually even get broached, or did you have to dance around the subject? Or like, how would you broach that kind of thing?
Maybe I wouldn't have said it as much anymore, because I work at a black radio station, so now I could say more now, okay, well, you should really only hire black people, whereas I probably wouldn't have said that,
which is wild if it's a black radio station.
I used to say at an Asian radio station that I used to work at, they used to hire white people all the time, and like, the thing that's weird about it is that there was South Asian languages being spoken and, you know, music. So I didn't really understand, like, but how can you hire someone that doesn't understand the language and can't comply the audio and things like that? But it would happen. So, I used to kick off about it then, but, like, I mean, it was a completely different reason.
That's so interesting. Yeah, I never would have thought that would even happen. But I don't know why I would be surprised by something like that.
Just some of our experiences like of late, it's like, yeah, it doesn't surprise me at all anymore. It's you know, obviously you're always kind of like, you're always like, seriously though, are we all like hearing
is
this?
Everyone okay?
Is everyone okay? And sometimes, like, now I think the difference with me is now, whereas before I'm doing that on the inside and like hoping that my face on the outside is just communicating, okay, right. Probably on the outside, I'm also like literally turning around, like, is everyone okay?
Yeah, it's true. Nicole, we have to ask you about this tweet that we saw, right?
Okay, yeah.
You tweeted this in November and it just says, what is it about being American that is just so embarrassing?
What does that even mean?
Oh, this is what it was. I was at the airport. I was flying back here. I had just been home for like 2.5 weeks. And I know it's like, it's already difficult enough traveling. You know what I mean? Like, it's already very stressful. Now with COVID restrictions, it's even more stressful. So you have to be like super organized and like, you just need to be on it. And I find Americans traveling, Americans in any airport or any kind of travel situation are the worst because they just expect everybody to either do things for them or just like that their behavior is just like acceptable. I don't know. It was like, I was just watching this family. You have to have your like fit to fly, you know what I mean? Your PCR test like done. You've got to like fill in this form. It was like this whole thing. And this family like comes and is just like expecting, again, like we're traveling during normal times. And I was just like watching them. They're getting upset with the flight attendants. They're getting upset with everybody. And I'm just like, you've got to be kidding me. Like, I was like, you can't be serious. Like, why aren't you ready? Like, everybody else here is ready. Why aren't you ready? I'm ready. I'm like, I don't get it. Like, so that was the thing. I just like had to be, I was just sitting there. I was just like, this is so cringe. Like, it was just like.
So it wasn't about you. I thought you were going to tell us a personal, like, I thought it was going to be something about you that you thought you were embarrassing, but this
I mean, I am embarrassing. I can be embarrassing, but this moment in particular I was just watching was really embarrassing for me. I was a bit embarrassed on behalf of Americans everywhere. I was just like, wow, we are really shit. Like, I get.
No,
I
understand.
I was like, I get why people are annoyed with us because we're fucking annoying. Like,
and like, obviously you're in the UK, you're here in the UK. So like, do you, you know, on the podcast, you guys talk about like what you identify as. So Emma, you identify as mixed race. Nicole, you identify as Black, right? But do you identify as American or British now?
Oh, I'm American.
Oh, okay, fine.
Definitely, yeah.
How long have you been here?
I've been here for 11 years.
That's a long time.
Yeah, somebody told me the other day that I could claim London. And I was like, I'm cool with that. Like, I would be okay to say that, like, I'm a Londoner in the sense that I live in London.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say that I'm British because I don't have British citizenship, I guess. So, yeah, I'm much more inclined to say that I'm American.
Wait, what brought you here, though?
So I moved to do my master's. I studied journalism. Ooh. I went to City.
Oh.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say a man. I was just like, oh. No. No.
I was like, I'm sure we'll get to those problems later on.
Wait, which problems?
Man problems.
Men problems. What?
Yeah. Oh, man problems.
What's
both
of yours relationship statuses at the moment?
I'm happily married for 5 years now.
Oh, congratulations.
Thanks.
I am actually separated from my husband. So that's been something that's happened over this past year that was pretty shit, but it's fine. You know, I'm getting through it and it's okay.
Are you healing at the moment?
Yeah, I would say that. Yeah, I'm feeling like happy that it's like we're closing out the year and I'm just like, this is a good opportunity to like put everything behind me. And it's like, this is a nice close.
Just so you know, I'm divorced, so I've been there. And it's a shit time. It's a shit time, but you'll get through it.
It is, yeah. But I think that's the thing that gets me through a lot of, like, through this in particular, but also like a lot of hard things, is that I know it's not permanent. I'm kind of like, when it feels bad, it feels really, really bad. But being able to be like, this isn't the end, my life isn't going to end over this, has really helped. Because yeah, it's really easy to get stuck in like that feeling of just like, this is the worst. I'm glad you can relate. That's really nice. That's really comforting.
Yeah, I'm sorry you're going through it. It is fucking shit. And I mean, yeah, you're saying, you know, you feel like that. I used to feel like, this is it. That's it. What's my life now? Where am I going to go? What am I going to do?
Oh my God, yeah. Oh my God, 100%. I feel like that was what it was in like the very, very early stages. I mentioned my dad to you before, like before we started recording, and he's quite like a spiritual guy. And he's like really, he's like such an, I find him to be like such an anomaly amongst men in general. But like, he's like really quite like inner. He really encouraged me. He's just like, you've made some like incredible decisions in your life, and like, you're gonna move forward, like you're still so young, like, you know, none of this is the end, kind of thing. So that definitely helped as well. I mean, obviously having any support is a huge help.
I'm really interested to know, actually, though, like, from both of you, like, do you feel the pressure from yourself or externally from other people and their expectations of like your life and where it should be?
Both. I know that I put a lot of pressure and expectation on myself. I know that for sure. And again, like, it's the same as if like, if you or anyone else were to come to me and say, you know, I'm getting divorced, or, you know, I've split up with somebody, or, you know, whatever. I know how I would react in that situation, which is, you know, with love and empathy and like complete and total understanding. Whereas for some reason, I got it into my mind. I was just like, this isn't how this is supposed to go. This isn't your life trajectory. You know, where did you go wrong? What mistakes have you made along the way that have brought you here? You know, and so I really put that on me. There was a lot of heavy expectations I put on my own shoulders. I think also because we get a lot of like outward projection of stuff. Like, obviously my parents have been happily married, like, you know, sit for like 30 something years. You know, same with a lot of my other relatives, but also I know friends and family who have also been divorced and like, or never married, and like, it's never been an issue. But I think, again, that kind of like societal view of like sticking things out, you know, making things work, and, you know, all of that kind of stuff, or like, you need to do X, Y, Z before you're like 30, before you're 35, before you're 40. I definitely internalize a lot of that stuff. So I think I would say it's both. I mean, or at least that's how it felt for me.
I felt exactly the same. It was all me. It wasn't really society. Like, I don't really hang around with people who, I don't know, a lot of my friends got married really late, and the ones that are married are very chill about it. They're not like, you should get married and you should have a kid by now. And, you know, all of that. And I got married kind of late. I think I was probably, what, I can't even remember, 2016. I don't know how old I was. Wait, maybe I was 34. I don't know.
Oh, what a grandma. What a grandma.
I was thinking, like, oh, roughly the same age as Kim Kardashian when she got married. I don't know, but anyway, no, but her second marriage, I think, I don't know.
I was just joking, by the way.
I put so much pressure on myself to make that marriage work and to stick it out and to make sure that I was going to end it for all the right reasons, and I wasn't just going to walk away because it was tough right now. And my parents were like, no, you know, you need to leave, like, it's not going to work out for you, blah 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 blah, come back home.
Wow, so your parents are really supportive.
That's yeah, really, they were so supportive.
Same, mine were too.
Yeah, and we're lucky because not everyone has that story. And
I mean, I think especially, you know, my mum's from the Philippines, my dad's from Ghana. This is not what African and Asian people
Same.
Do, really.
Yeah.
And I remember, you know, the first time I mentioned it to them, and I was just like wrecked and like humiliated and embarrassed. And they were just like, why are you embarrassed? If you could tell anyone about this, it should be us. Like, why would you feel like you can't take this to us? So that was incredible. Like, I can imagine there are people out there who don't have that kind of support. But when you do, yeah, it relieves so much. You know, I think a lot of like the anxiety and like guilt and shame that you can feel around that, they helped me with that a lot, for sure.
I only started talking about it on the podcast recently, like literally hardly, what, 2 episodes ago?
This is the first time I've ever mentioned it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so this is, I mean, it's nice. I'm so glad, again, like you said, that you can relate to what I'm saying, because it's also that thing of like, I'm literally terrified of like dropping a bombshell on people. I think that's the other thing as well. It's that I find so strange is that like, I'm telling people something quite serious, so then they feel kind of bad as well. And I'm always just like, but it's like, it's okay. Like, it's going to be fine.
Yeah, so you like, made you that to, decision. You, it's like,
yeah. It's like, you feel like you've got to comfort them as well. Like, it's a lot. It's like a lot of like weird conflicting emotions.
Yeah.
I went to eat the other day, and me and my friend were like, oh, let's get a nice drink. And we didn't want an alcoholic drink. And then the guy was like, it's okay, I'll go get you the menu of like non-alcoholic drinks. And not saying that separation is like what I'm about to say, but anyway, he came back with this menu, and then he was like, oh yeah, I love these drinks, blah blah, I don't drink anymore. And then my friend was like, why? And he was like, because I was an alcoholic for 10 years. I'm really like, you know, when things are awkward or whatever, I don't ever really feel it. But at that point, I was like, I don't know what to say, but he shouldn't feel any way about it. He can say it.
Yeah.
And good. But it's also like, I didn't know what to say at that point. But I was kind of glad he said it, because it's like, this is real.
Because it's true. Yeah, exactly. I think that's the other thing as well. It's like, I can't control how other people are going to react or how they're going to feel about it. And like, that's fine. Like, that's on them. Like, in certain moments, I just have to, of course, just be honest about what's going on. So
speaking of honesty, you are very honest in your Instagram captions. You quite a lot of the time talk about things that you've been talking about in therapy or thinking about. That's quite a brave thing to do, by the way.
Oh, thank you. I feel like I'm just like a serial oversharer. I feel like I just, I can't help but overshare. Maybe it's an American thing. I don't know.
What kind of reactions have you got from people from the things that you've shared?
I mean, yeah, they've been really incredible. I think that the strangest thing for me, I think being on the internet, I've always used it as like, again, this kind of like online diary style type of thing. Kind of just saying what I'm feeling and thinking, because like, maybe it's because I'm an only child and I didn't have anyone else to talk to. Oh my God, snap.
We're the same.
Raj is also an only child.
We're like this.
Shit, what's your star sign? Quick.
I'm a Taurus.
Oh, fuck you. Now Raj is a Taurus.
Twin.
Emma, what's your star sign?
Cancer.
Oh, we get on with Cancers.
Okay, I'm a Pisces. I feel like we're all getting on here. We're all working.
We're in the zone.
Fuck.
Earth and water.
That's mad.
Oh, fuck.
That's so funny. But yeah, the reaction from people has always been like, people have been so gracious and like sharing their own experiences with me and like, you know, giving me advice on grief, for example, or like, you know, telling me that they can relate to feeling insecure about my body, for example, like those kinds of things. Like people have been like amazing, like over the years, and just like so generous with everything that they've come to share with me. Like it's been, I've only benefited from being honest and vulnerable with people online. So again, like I haven't been sharing much about, you know, getting separated and things like that, but I know it's coming and I'm hoping that, you know, people will again continue to just be like super supportive.
Of course they will.
So yeah. Of course they
will. You know, there's a point though I've thought recently with, you know, oversharing and stuff, not oversharing, but, you know, sharing your story and just being like authentically,
yeah,
talking about things, being honest. I feel like, you know, because of the kind of work that we do, we can do that. Mm. But then also we do, like me and Raj do like a bit more corporate work as well.
Yeah.
Sometimes I feel like that is at odds with this. So it's like, okay, say if I was going to talk about my mental health or make a joke about mental health, or I don't know, the other day at work, I probably said something I shouldn't have said about mental health. And then I was like, oh, fuck, if this gets out, then it would look like I am crazy.
Yeah.
I don't know. Everyone goes through it. So, yeah, I don't know.
I can really relate to that.
Really?
Yeah, really. I think I had a lot more maybe sleepless nights than you when we started the podcast, Nicole.
Yeah.
I literally used to be awake at night after recording, me like going over everything I'd said, like, should I have said that?
Mm.
Should I be sharing that? Like, as somebody who runs not a corporate business, but who is the owner of their business and who has to procure clients, and the main reason clients come to me is me, and it's a trust thing.
Yeah.
I look after a lot of people's proverbial babies, like when I'm building their brands or looking after the way that they talk about their businesses. And so I definitely had never been so honest and open about any of the things that we talk about, partly because nobody ever asked us, and we've talked about that, how nobody really ever seemed to be curious about this stuff.
Yeah.
Or know that there was any stuff to be said. But also I think because, especially with my family situation, my family is just my family. And I feel like, you know, similarly, like the way people react to perhaps you talking about separation when it's just a thing that you're going through or a thing that exists in your life, I feel like maybe sometimes the reactions people give to what for me is like really normal life can kind of shake you a little bit.
Yeah.
The kind of two realities merging or something. I still have quite an old-fashioned view of how you project yourself at work as a business owner versus the real you, I guess, that is 100% the authentic you that you can share all of yourself in. And I think we kind of have to get as close to that as possible with the podcast. I'm sure that you too feel like that as well. But still, when it comes to work, I feel the same. I'm kind of freaked out by those people who are my clients and my potential clients knowing that much detail.
You know what I've realized? You're the Hardeep of the podcast, because Hardeep is that person like where she'll be like, Raj, you shouldn't have said that. Raj, take that bit out. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. And I'll be like, no, it's fine. It's fine.
Yeah,
yeah, it's fine if I said that.
And that's Nicole. Nicole be like, no, leave it in. Leave it in.
I love that you two have that same dynamic, because like, I'm like, oh my God, like, dynamic, yeah, it's crazy. Yeah. It's actually crazy.
It's so funny. Yeah.
I was going to talk about an episode of yours that I heard where you guys were talking about Meghan Markle, Oprah and good old Harry. And that there was a missed opportunity there to hear from mixed race women and their experiences of racism. And I really wanted to talk about that. So
100.
Like, what is that about? Because you mentioned that people think that mixed race women don't get it that bad.
Yeah. So I guess I will start from the thing that I noticed that kind of jarred me a little bit was, again, it was like, it was an opportunity, obviously, as usual, places like, you know, Sky, BBC, you know, all the big news channels, you know, wheel out their talking heads. Yeah, good morning, Britain. Wheel out their talking heads. And of course, that was, you know, such a major story, you know, her talking about her mental health and thoughts of suicide and everything like that. It was so, so, so deep. Like, that interview is just like, it's groundbreaking stuff. What I found so strange was obviously noticing the rhetoric around Meghan, whether it's in news publications or on TV, even down to Twitter and people just talking about her in general, is that, you know, when things are great with her, people are fine to chalk that up to her mixed race privilege, her light skin privilege, right? And then when these very, very serious things happen to her and her family and her child, she's then seen as a Black woman. And, you know, and even again, like I said before, like in media, picks and chooses the times they want to refer to her as Black or mixed or, you know, her white father or her Black mother, these kinds of like really specific details. And so what I found really strange was that, and we talked about this on the podcast, is that like here was a real opportunity again to, you know, invite mixed women with all of the different experiences, because of course my experience is going to be nothing like hers, to speak to that. And it was something that was solely left to Black women, to monoracial Black women. I found that odd because, again, you know, in any instance where, for example, if we were talking about colorism or if we were talking to any, you know, any other issue that was about Blackness in particular, if Emma and I rocked up on Good Morning Britain, we would be absolutely torn apart.
As the only spokespeople.
As the only ones, exactly. As though to say, again, you know, this is what this represents. Like, we are here to represent the Black community. You know, people would not be pleased with that. I found that really difficult. Again, I just think because a lot of the times we can't be honest about that and how that looks. Emma, I'm sure you have more to say and are more articulate than me.
I always have so much to say about this, but... Yeah, it's really layered and complex because I think there's also a feeling that we're everywhere.
Mm.
And that for me is an example of how, like, it's like we're everywhere, but we're actually nowhere. And that, you know, as Nicole said, was a prime opportunity for us to come and speak, not us personally, but people from the mixed community.
Yeah.
To come and speak, but nobody was invited, it seems. And so... Yeah, it's a bit of a weird one because it's all part of this people identifying us for us. When it suits them, we can be part of their community. And when it doesn't, we're not. And I think more often than not, maybe we're not even considered a group that is of note to be spoken to.
Yeah.
About specific experiences, which is odd given that we are the fastest growing demographic in the UK. And you know, we started this podcast because it struck us. It's kind of odd that nobody's really asking these questions and wanting to know more and understanding the intersects of race in this way and of our experiences. And I know, Raj, you said earlier, you know, you identify as mixed. I identify as mixed and Black. And, you know, I believe that it is my right and every mixed person's right to be able to have that dual identity. And it just what it is, like, it's, I think, maybe difficult for people to understand because people have only just been started to talk about this. But yeah, it's,
yeah, do you think that the reason why they didn't go to mixed women, because the people that are booking it, they don't see that, do you know what I mean? They're just,
yeah, I mean I reckon so. I feel like that's part of it, absolutely. They wouldn't even consider that. They just saw this as an opportunity to get controversial opinions, you know, whatever it might be, just from whomever agrees to go on. All of us working in this industry get, you know, why they want certain people to come on and speak. But I completely agree with you, is that thought would have never even crossed their minds about the type of person to invite.
But it's also because these conversations in the media are still, for the most part, still so binary and simple. Like, they're so basic.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people don't really, are not getting into the layers. And like you say, Raj, it's also about who those people are that are doing that commissioning and that are doing that casting or choosing of people to come and speak. Yeah, it's just really interesting how Meghan obviously has, in our opinion, suffered some of the most disgusting racial abuse that we've seen in the media in the UK in our lifetimes. And yet we're not still having this conversation about mixed race not being some sort of blanket application. And we're not going deeper into the levels of like that intersection of class, nationality, and circumstantial situation. So yeah, I think that it would have been much more intelligent conversation to have brought that lived experience across a number of mixed people to the conversation, really.
You know, if anyone's listening that is a decision maker, something will click in your mind right now. And things can change.
Absolutely.
I actually did hear one of your episodes earlier about Blackish, Grownish, Mixedish. I didn't even know Mixedish is a thing, but I really like Grownish. How do you guys feel about mixed race representation on TV?
I actually met somebody, an actor from Shadow and Bone the other day. I was really excited.
Oh, really?
I love
that show.
Yeah. It's a great show.
I
was doing a job and it was like a Westfield randomly. And he was just like, he was like an actor. It was like part of this thing. And he was like, oh, I was in Shadow and Bone. I was like, oh my God. I was really excited. Anyways, but I'm saying that because obviously I felt like that was like a really cool new example of telling a mixed story that didn't feel so, oh, this is just a mixed person who's just cast in something as part of a Black family, for example. I'm using Black because so many people feel like, oh, you know, Zahra Shahidi is in everything, Zendaya is in everything, you know, these are the quintessential kind of mixed actresses, or these are the mixed actresses of the moment, so people feel like that they're everywhere. Whereas I would say, and Emma and I have spoken about this on the podcast a few times, we feel like mixed stories are so different. Like, they're so nuanced. I've never seen a family like mine on TV or in film. And what I loved about Shadow and Bone in particular was that it provided an opportunity to talk about the duality. It provided an opportunity to talk about feeling conflicted, or even feeling like, again, people are prejudging you because you should be like this, or you should be doing this, or, oh, you're too much of this and not enough of that, in a way that was different because it's in this fantasy world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we don't get those stories very often at all. So again, even, you know, however people might feel about, you know, Blackish, Grownish, Mixedish, whatever, it's so amazing that they're able to talk about these family dynamics and see, again, you know, even just family, mixed families reflected back at you. Because yeah, when I was a kid, I didn't have any of that. so it's been really nice. I think the stories are definitely few and far between, though, for sure.
One that sticks out for me is another one that you've talked about on the podcast, but another one that I loved, and I always say to Hardy, we have to do a special on it, is Ginny and Georgia.
Yeah, we loved it.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
I love so that you guys cute. Talked about, yeah, that scene. There's this scene where it's Halloween, and she comes down and she's like, we're going to all dress as Britney Spears, different mm-hmm. versions of Britney Spears. And her Black friend is like, oh, that's you. Kind of is the vibe was like, that's mm-hmm. you. Yeah, that's not for me kind of thing.
Exactly.
Like, you're not. And I think that side of things I've never seen on screen before. And I've heard those conversations amongst mm-hmm. my friends.
Yeah.
I've heard that stuff. I've never seen it in a TV show. And
never. And
I was just like, wow, like this is going to make a lot of people feel very seen right now.
100%.
But have you guys ever experienced, I'm assuming you have, experience where like someone's trying to insinuate you're not Black enough or you're not white enough? Or
I mean, ooh, every goddamn day.
Yeah.
I know.
I mean, yeah, not so much now, me as an adult, but 100%. I mean, that scene with her and her friend, I was like, that's like my entire high school career. Absolutely. Like, that was my whole high school life, was feeling so, in that moment, she's like humiliated. And I felt that humiliation. I've definitely been there in that way of being like, I'm doing something wrong, or like, I haven't been raised in the right way to be Black, basically. So I felt that was really, really deep. And so as a teenager, even in young adult life, you know, there are comments from people that, you know, have really, really triggered me. And so seeing that scene, I was just like, oh my God, this, like, it brought me straight back to that. Cause I've always been, you know, such a little emo kid and like loved punk music.
You're
and,
to
like,
punk. Yeah.
And like stuff that like, Although again, like looking back at the history, this is not an uncommon thing because, you know, obviously, you know, so many incredible Black musicians were rock musicians. And that's where, you know, all of these famous bands got their inspiration from, of course. So I felt really affirmed in that knowledge, you know, over time when I learned that, because when I was a kid, I was just surrounded by white people at gigs. And I was just like, clearly, like, I'm the one who's sticking out when
that's
really...
That's Hardeep. Yeah. Yeah, that she went to a JLS concert and everyone else was...
Oh, God.
She was the only brown person there.
Yeah, that was recently. But when growing up, I'd go to... where did I go? Like, scouting for girls and Fallout Boy. You know, things like that. And it's just so... Ugh.
Pete Wentz's mix.
And you would never know.
Yeah, his there mom you is go. Black.
Emma, what about your experiences?
I mean, I think I had one of these experiences on Friday, but kind of like maybe the opposite way to you're talking about.
Okay.
We went out to a press event and I definitely feel like I was made to feel by the staff that I wasn't white enough to be in that particular place. I guess that's an interesting one. Like, obviously, I'm mixed race and I am white and Black, but it's not like I would ever identify as white because you can't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I guess that was just a reaffirmation of not being white enough to claim that part of your heritage when, in those spaces. So, yeah, that was an interesting one.
Yeah. Not white enough, not rich enough.
Yeah. Not white enough, not rich enough. But... definitely Black enough to be racially profiled and humiliated in front of your peers at a professional event. So yeah, that is interesting then coupled with when you see, like, for example, one of the reasons I'm not on Twitter is because I am not interested in exposing myself to some of the like sick commentary on how like...
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mixed Black white people are not Black.
Yeah.
Are not Black enough. And that's something that is like, you know, an ongoing rhetoric. So I think that, you know, that's a very good example of where you'll find that experience on a daily basis. But yeah, like Nicole said, I had many experiences of that, like growing up. I've even had an experience of clients challenging my ex-clients, no longer clients, challenging my knowledge around Blackness in regards to a campaign that we were doing, which is weird because everybody there was white. So I was definitely the most qualified person to be speaking on this issue at the time.
Yeah.
But even there, it's so like... bizarre.
It's really difficult to understand and make sense of. Like, I can't seem to really get it.
I feel like, though, you know, being brown, when you meet people sometimes, I feel like they meet you and they're trying to see how brown you are.
Yeah.
I get that a lot. So like, oh, do you know the language? Blah, blah, blah. Do you? Yeah.
It reminds me of, again, this... one of our interviews we had with Doc Brown, Ben Bailey Smith. And he was talking about being entry-level Black. And I'm not brown, but I can imagine it's like people really try and like test you, you know, I mean, it's like they try and like suss you to see how much you are or if it's too much or not enough kind of vibe.
Yeah.
Like, it's really weird.
It's really weird.
What's your experience been like of dating? Here we go. Let's go there.
I've got to speak my truth. So really and truly, any time I've dated or have tried to date Black guys in the past, the insinuation, I've been outrightly told that I act too white
or I don't know enough of XYZ. So I've been, again, like made to feel not black enough for black men. So that was weird for me. And again, like growing up, they didn't really pay attention to me very often because of the circles I ran in. Like I was in theater and like did choir. Like I was not cool. not that like
we think you're cool. We're like, yeah.
Raj is talking about Glee Club in her head, exactly. And she's thinking about it.
Yeah, she can read my mind.
She's like, it's way cool.
Yeah, but you two are the same person, so yeah. Me and Hardy are like, yeah, okay.
Yeah. I was literally saying yesterday, I hate musicals.
See, I love musicals.
Yeah.
I love musicals.
I don't like musicals where people dress as animals and personify animals.
Oh no, I don't like that. I don't like that.
Oh, you guys should watch Tick Tick Boom on Netflix. It's so good.
I love it because I loved Rent. Oh, so I was already all over that.
I haven't seen Rent, so I'm dying to see Rent now.
Oh like. My, you need to see Rent.
Wait, what is it about the animal thing?
I just find it repulsive. Like, I find it like so weird. Like, it makes me feel really icky. I'm like, why are you dressed as animals? Like, pretending to be animals. But then you're humans inside the animals.
Like, oh, what about The Lion King?
Even though it's I don't even watch The Lion King. No.
I think I know what you mean. That was the most embarrassing thing about drama. When we were at drama school, you know, when they were like, go around and act like an animal. That was a thing that
But then on top of that.
And that was like, that was first lesson.
And then they add the singing on top of that. It's like an additional level of like.
Oh, cringe.
Cringe. It's bad enough when, like, you're watching TV drama and someone just starts singing randomly, like, and then you're like, "Oh shit, musical." Sorry, guys. It's a musical drama. It just throws me off. I'm like, no, this can only be done in
I know what you mean as well. I'm much more into humans acting like humans, basically.
Sorry, back to your experiences.
That was mainly my experience. So yeah, I have dated a lot of white guys in the past, and I think, again, you know, in terms of things that I always found difficult to hear was like, oh, it's as like, as though when people find that out about me, it's like oh yeah, of course you do, you know what I mean, like, because you're mixed and that's what you do as mixed people. So it kind of perpetuates the cycle with black men as well, because they are also like, if they find out that I've either dated or have been with a white, they're immediately just like, oh, like you're one of those. And so it's kind of, yeah, it's like this like perpetuating like cycle of just like.
Bloody hell.
Rejection. I can't be that person who diminishes my relationships just because the person that I'm with or have been with is white. You know what I mean? I don't ascribe to those things because there's nothing wrong with dating white people. We've spoken about this in a previous episode, you know, about interracial families, and like my parents were the first interracial couple I ever saw, and it was never an issue for them in terms of culturally, you know, in terms of their values, in terms of like how much they loved each other. Like all I saw was that. So it was never, you know, choosing someone based on their race was never going to be a consideration for me. So, I mean, that's basically my experience.
Thank you. Next.
We're going to get into your lessons now. And the first lesson's coming. It's a joint one from Emma and Nicole. So one taught me.
Men who don't come to pick you up from your door are not worth your time.
This is controversial.
Is it?
I think so.
Yeah, Hardy was like ready. She's ready to like ask you loads of questions. Tell us about this, and where does this come from? How did you learn this lesson?
So this comes from a rule my mum had when I was growing up and basically starting to like want to date boys and think about boys.
My dad had this rule.
And she basically said to me, you can only date, you're only allowed to date if the boy will come and pick you up and collect you from the house and like introduce himself and then you can go. Which obviously at the time was not what anyone was doing. Like everyone was just like going to meet outside McDonald's and like hang around in the like shopping center and you just like meet someone outside River Island.
Is your mom a small Filipino woman slash
I feel like her spirit obviously was like, sadly
I think her spirit is this
Her spirit is that of an immigrant.
Yeah. It is. She was like quite militant and strict about those kind of, like, she had these ideas.
My parents are the exact same.
But what that taught me was, from a very young age, I feel like I knew what it looked like for a partner to go out of their way to show you that they like respect you and that they care enough to do the things that are being asked of them, even if they don't necessarily understand exactly why at that time, because obviously young boys did not understand, like 14-year-old boys did not understand why they were being asked to do this.
But were they scared? Weren't they scared to like knock on the door and be like, yo, it's me?
Well, I think as a result, I didn't really have any dates.
Oh,
which
shit.
Is obviously the plan.
Look at your mum.
Yeah. Wow. Mum seems was like not a fool. Like, she was no fool. She
like,
had
wow.
set this up. But there was one time when she got her bluffers called, basically. So when I like was on a family holiday, I met this boy. We were in Cornwall and he was probably the first boy that was actually interested in me. Like, obviously, like, we chatted and stuff and we exchanged numbers. I think we had a kiss on the beach
tricky.
At one point.
Ooh.
Romantic.
Yeah, romantic. but basically, he lived in Birmingham, so I think my mum thought it was all quite safe. She was like, you're never going to see him again, so happy days for me. Like, parental worries over immediately as soon as the holiday is over. So he obviously like went off home, we went off home, but we continued to talk on the phone like every day, pretty much.
So cute.
And then one day he said that he was coming down to visit and that he was gonna like, we could go out and he was gonna take me out.
Oh, this is cute.
Anyway, I told my mum this, but she didn't believe me.
Oh.
And then one weekend, I just got this call from him from a telephone box.
Oh my God.
Basically saying that he'd just got off the train at Watford Junction.
This is very cute. My heart's melting.
And that he didn't
Aww.
Have a,
this is so cute.
He didn't have a telephone. He didn't have a mobile because at that time, those
yeah.
times
yeah.
we didn't all have mobiles.
Yeah. Was it a reverse charge call?
Reverse charge call, but I think it was a very quick call because it was like the money was running down. Yeah, he basically was like, oh, I'm coming to your house, and I was like, okay. And he was like, how do I get there? And I had to like try to describe to
oh my
him
God, this is
just
so
like follow
sweet.
This long road
yeah.
turn left, turn right, do this, do that. And I remember getting off the phone to him and he was like, don't worry, I will get there.
Oh, cute.
And I told my mum, I was like, Danny is actually in Watford and he's coming. And you said that if somebody comes to the door, like, that I can go out with them. But I was like, but also I tried to get her to let me leave to go to find him because I was like, it is a bit deep. Like, he's just a young boy that's like
yeah.
literally roaming the streets with no phone, no map, nothing. But she wouldn't. She was just like, no, the rules are the rules. You know the rules.
Wow.
So if he finds his way here,
what?
Happy days for you. But if he doesn't, that's it. Sorry.
Oh, my
like,
God.
It is what it is. So I remember this, like, anxious, like, 45 minutes to an hour of, like, just waiting and, like, wondering, is he going to get here? Is he coming?
He wouldn't have gone all the way there and not got there, surely.
Oh, well, apparently he asked people, like, on the way, he was just asking people, like, how can I
oh
get
God,
to this place? And, like,
so
you know, proper old school, like,
yeah,
just, I guess he was from Birmingham as well. So it's like, maybe
he
like,
had no idea. Oh my God, bless him.
Yeah. But yeah, he made it, turned up at my door, completely upended my mum's rule of terror in terms of my dating. And yeah, the rest
when
is history.
I first read this, when we were first discussing it earlier, I was like, men who don't come to pick you up for a date aren't worth your time, right? And I was thinking, this is rude. Why are we expecting so much from dudes? Like, are we going to do the same? Like, if we want equality? I was thinking this, imagine if, like, my brother, some girl's parents were like, you've got to come here and da-da-da-da. And I was like, no. But now you've explained it, I understand, because it is kind of like a vetting process.
It is a vetting process.
100.
It is to make sure you've got some quality.
Yeah.
And my mum always did say growing up, like, when you're seeing guys, make sure you tell them, I know that they exist and that you bring them to the house if you want. And it was her way of being like, because if they're trying to do shady shit, they're not trying to meet everyone in your life.
Mm.
And
that's exactly it. Yeah.
I'm not saying this is always the case, but I had cases of like meeting people who were like a bit dodgy, and they, if I wish I had had more of a vetting process like that.
Mm.
Yeah. Like my parents were exactly the same. And I remember I was like, this is so embarrassing, so humiliating, because all the other girls get to, you know, meet at the mall and do whatever. And like, I had to be like telling anybody who, you know, if any guy liked me or whatever, I'd be like, oh, my parents, like, you have to like come to the door and like come and like pick me up, or kind of, that kind of thing. And like, in fairness, like some of them like got it, but like obviously the ones who don't get it, again, it's like the bar is quite low. Do you know what I mean?
Mm,
coming to the door and saying hi to your parents, the bar is pretty low. Mm. Or even now as you're older, like coming to get you, that like that's quite a low bar. So like, 100%. That was my parents. I get now that the message they were trying to impart on me was also like, don't waste time with these boys, men who aren't willing to put this time, effort, energy into you.
It's like a bit of investment.
Yeah, exactly.
Although I wouldn't do that now with like, I don't know. Well, maybe actually it still would be good with like dating apps, hypothetically speaking. Say if you're on them and you're going on like dates or you're dating. Part of me is like safety. I wouldn't want people to know where I live. But then again, I don't want to meet someone who wouldn't want to meet. I want my housemate to vet someone before I go out with them.
Exactly.
Yeah, definitely.
Like now, how do you make this? How would you? Because I feel like as kids, this is great. Like, and I would do this for my kids as well. But what would you do now when you're dating then? Like, would someone pick you up?
Yeah, I wouldn't do it as like a, you have to come to the door and come pick me up, or like come know where I live if I don't know you. But I do think it's like, for me, it would be like assessing effort and enthusiasm in other ways. Can they plan a date?
Yeah.
Can they stick to a plan? Can they stick to a time?
Yeah.
Do they ask you how your day is going? Like I said, the bar is in hell. Like the bar is pretty low.
It is.
So like if they can't even do the bare minimum effort, energy, enthusiasm, if you're not excited to see me or excited to even tell me that you want to see me or make plans, those kinds of things, then what's the point? Like, I just think I don't have time for any of that. If you're not 100%, I think with dating apps especially, it's like we're at this era of like, oh, we're just too cool to even be excited about seeing someone anymore. It's like you have to be so like, like you don't care. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you have to be so nonchalant. It's just like, it just makes everything feel shit all the time. It's like, no, I don't have time for that.
I think that's the nail on the head. And I think that's what my mum taught me and what I've always held with myself. I would never date, be with someone, like marry somebody who is nonchalant about me. If I get the slightest inkling that you have any attitude of nonchalance about me,
no way.
You've come to the wrong door, my friend.
Exactly.
So kindly remove yourself from my doorstep.
Yeah.
Because it's just not a thing. Like, it's not a thing. And I think that that's what it instilled in me. It's like, I am enough for somebody to come to our front door, put themselves out of their way as a teenager who might be a little bit embarrassed to do this because they've not had to do this before.
Yeah.
But if they have the steel to do this, that's step one of like, okay, we can talk.
Exactly.
You know what else is really interesting about this is that both of you had that and both of you chose to go with that rather than lie and say, I'm going with my friends to the shopping center and go meet a guy there.
Or did you? Did you try?
Yeah. What stopped you from doing that?
I was such a goody two shoes type of kid. I wouldn't like tell on anyone, but like I was so listening to my parents' instructions.
Look at this well-behaved human beings.
To be fair, I mean, in Virginia, there's not a lot of places you can run away to be fair, without a car. And I didn't have a car again. So like all these boys had cars. I couldn't drive, so I couldn't go off. I couldn't sneak off anywhere because I'd have no way of getting there. So, yeah.
Emma, what about you? You were in Harrow, so...
I, in the beginning, it was I obviously went along with all of this, but then as I got older and I like realized how to like cheat the rules, I obviously did cheat the rules.
Okay.
Even to be honest, I met Danny because like we'd gone on holiday and I'd taken a friend on holiday with me, and we climbed out of the caravan window to meet Danny and his friend on the beach. That's how that kiss occurred. So the rebel is in me. Like, I was like, how far can I push these boundaries? But my mum obviously saw that and knew that. So she was like, let's get a setup in place because you're going to be trying to like test this stuff. But let's get a base level thing in there.
Yeah.
Is Danny who you're with now?
Right, you're so funny.
God, no.
I was like, oh, okay. You know why? Because you were like, and the rest is history. And I was like, what does she mean?
I just meant as in like my first sort of like foray into the like dating
scene. Yeah.
That's cute. That's very cute. So what are you guys saying thank you next to?
I'm saying thank you next to time wasters, aka anyone who doesn't show you any enthusiasm, energy, excitement for wanting to date you, then they're just a waste of time. And that's a no-go for me.
100. I'm saying thank you next to the idea that if someone can't put the effort in, they stand any chance of moving forward with you.
So we're going to get on to your second lesson. And this one is coming from Emma. So one taught me
that women of colour are beautiful.
Why on earth is this a lesson?
Yeah, it shouldn't be really, but you may have seen I don't know if it was a meme or it was a tweet actually, but that there was this thing floating around that said, are you ugly or are you just a person of colour and you grew up in a predominantly white area? I just found it hilarious because I found it so relatable. I don't know about all of you, but yeah, that's like fully my experience of growing up. I feel like it was never ever communicated to me at school, you know, meeting like boys and even probably into like until I went to uni, probably, to be frank.
Yeah.
That I was beautiful. Yeah. So I just, you know, you're not considered conventionally beautiful when you grow up in those environments where blonde and white is the thing.
Oh, yeah. I related to that a lot. I think it was a TikTok. I'm pretty sure it was a TikTok because I'm sure I have it saved somewhere. But I agree. And I remember my best friend growing up was a beautiful blonde girl named Kelly. I don't know if she'll actually listen to this. Like, she follows me on Instagram, so this might be awkward for her to hear. But I remember how I was her best friend, but like all the boys at school like were in love with her. Like, again, she was like beautiful blonde hair, like freckles, like, again, very quintessentially all American style. And I remember feeling so like embarrassed a lot of the time. It was like almost as though I shouldn't be her friend because everybody loved her so much. And I remember I went to a private school, so we had to wear uniforms every day, but then like one day out of the month we had like a non-uniform day, and on those days Kelly would always ask, she would always be like, oh, should we dress this, like wear the same outfit? This is obviously not anything that anyone would do now because this is just I'm just painting a picture of how uncool we are. I mean, she was cool. I was not. I remember being like, I would say yes, but I was like super like shy about it because I was just so aware of how we didn't look alike at all. Like, we looked so different. And so, yeah, like I definitely had that insecurity like my whole life. I think until, like Emma said, like it wasn't until later on in life, college years maybe, that I was just like, oh my God, like I've literally just been fully indoctrinated by this really Western beauty standards and just whiteness in general. Like I remember being, I used to be just triggered by blondes in general, like as like a dating thing. Like I was just so I found them to be the antithesis of who I was. So I was just like, I can't. Like, it's just too much. I've moved past this now. It's okay. I'm cool with blondes. Yeah. No beef. No beef with blondes. But yeah.
No beef with Kelly.
Exactly. No beef with Kelly. It took me a while to understand you know, to really lean into to my beauty as well and understand what that's supposed to look like for me rather than trying to make myself look like someone else.
I have a lot of that chemical, I think, you know, like what happens to women when they have babies and then
yeah.
they just forget things because it was like too traumatic.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just have that normally.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I especially doing this podcast, like I've remembered lots of experiences
Same.
That would have made me internalize that for a while, even though obviously my parents and my family always told me that I was beautiful. And I sort of, obviously, I knew it. And also that's also that why it was such a like head fuck, to be honest, because
yeah.
I found it confusing. I definitely remember thinking, but I don't really understand what's happening here because I'm pretty sure, like...
I just thought that was their job to tell me that. Like, I didn't believe them. I just was like, it's your job as a parent to say these things. I was just like, you're meant to make me feel better and I know that's not true.
It is really sad. I feel like I knew, I somewhere, like, I did know, like, I was... a perfectly attractive person, and maybe that was actually a self-defined beauty thing or something that wasn't maybe about aesthetics, I don't know, but I did find it to be confusing, the situation, because it's like not being picked
yeah.
for the team every time for years of your life and being like, but I'm really actually quite good at basketball,
yeah.
actually, you know, pretty good at hockey, like what's happening. Yeah. But I also had some really horrific experiences that I've remembered from doing the podcast, like two boys that wanted, like one boy that wanted to actually, for us to meet up, but for it to be secret.
Oh.
Because he didn't want anybody in our school to know.
Yeah.
And that went on for quite a while. And I remember a really horrible feeling of like, I know that this is wrong and I know that there's like something really horrible going on, but I don't,
you're like, I don't know how to handle this or what to do about it. Yeah.
And then there was another boy who later, like when we were a bit older, I think it was would have been like just the year before sixth form or maybe even in sixth form, I can't remember, but I remember that he like really wanted to like send me like sexy texts all the time. But again, he didn't want anyone to know that we were having these kind of communications.
That's fucked.
Oh my God.
I hate that.
Yeah, it's just like, I don't know, these really awkward memories that are little things, but they're actually...
Because it paints a picture, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, it really affects you. Like, you don't know, like, how those, like, small things really do, like, form how you view yourself. Like, especially at that age, like, it's really, yeah.
It's so mad that we've... well, Raj, you didn't grow up in a white era, but I did. I
grew up in a brown town, innit?
Yeah, and I've had the same experiences as you both. But it's interesting, you said, Emma, about you knew deep down that you were beautiful. I didn't, which is really sad. Which is really sad. I didn't have that. But I did have that feeling of like, yeah, not being picked all the time. I actually remember like crying about it in primary school. You're at odds with what is seen as beautiful. But then I think me and Raj have had this conversation before. Things did start to change. Like, I don't know, Enrique Iglesias started bringing these ambiguous women out, you know, in his music videos. Then 2000 yeah. and whatever, you got Kim Kardashian. And slowly it was like, well, these people do look more like me. But I was like, oh, but they're Spanish. Like, if we're talking about Enrique. But I do remember, yeah, like, you know, like the hot European-y women.
I get that.
They were like...
Yeah,
they were there.
Yeah.
They were there. Yeah, definitely.
But I think like there's a point in there as well about, you know, being mixed and being lighter skinned. If you're still the only person, like if you're still the only black person, you're the black person.
Yeah.
So it is a different experience from like growing up in the center of London where there's like a more of a spectrum of blackness, and there's almost like that opportunity for colorism to be rife and for it to be like,
yeah,
you know, for that lighter skinned person, potentially, I don't know, this is not my experience, to be chosen over a darker skinned woman. But when it's you just like
on your own,
even
on
your own, that's it, you're it, like, so your experience is that.
And
I think that's something that probably isn't really spoken about enough either.
True.
And there's no one to share it with or talk to, like,
yeah,
figure it out with.
Exactly.
It's just, you know. I'm just going to say to you guys, like, when I was at school, like, guys just didn't fancy me at all. And I couldn't, like... it's not that I was in an area where it was like, you know, boys that weren't my ethnicity, so they might have thought, oh, weird, like whatever.
Yeah.
It was just, I don't know, they just didn't like me. So
maybe they were.
That was interesting.
You've got, I was like, you have so much to give, you know. I'd be like, what can I add to this girl's life, you know?
Shut
up. I'd feel insecure.
No, I was weird. I was a really weird kid. Like, and also, I had a mustache.
I do think you've got a point there.
Yeah,
that,
I'd
like,
be intimidated.
Intimidation.
Rich.
I do think that also.
And boys are dumb.
Yeah, so dumb.
So
yeah.
Anyway, so don't worry. We're, you know, sometimes they just, even if things are, you know, not like that, they just don't like you anyway. I'm just saying, you know, like, I don't know, man. I can't figure it out. Just like, what was my reason then? Like, maybe I just, I couldn't connect to them.
Yeah. That you were clearly, I think that was that thing that's also going around now. It's like, you're not too much for somebody.
Yes.
They're just not enough for you or something like that. I don't know. One of those good phrases. I don't know.
Yeah. Bye, brown boys.
You do say that, like, you know, you try and find people who've got like the same interests as you and things like that, and as we all do, right?
Yeah.
So I think it's maybe
just that.
Brown boys weren't advanced enough for you, Badge.
They weren't watching
Ginny and Georgia.
Yeah.
They were watching EastEnders or something.
Guys, this brown boy matched with me on a dating app. I'm just going to tell you very briefly about this week. And he's really pissed me off with his conversations. And like,
hold on, you're on a dating app? What?
Also, you know I'm on Hinge. I've always been on Hinge. And like, he was just like...
Oh, but I didn't know you're active, first of all.
First things first, this is such a shit opening line. Oh, hey, Raj, how are you? Oh, everyone says that. Come on. Anyway, so then he was like, I was like, oh, I'm out here dodging Omarion. I made a joke. He didn't understand it was a joke.
Oh, he didn't get it. Oh, no, he doesn't know. See, this is what I'm saying. Like, you need to find someone who's on your level.
I feel like that's what you were doing, though. You were testing with the reference.
So yeah, that's it. You did test, and you tested well.
And he didn't get it. Yeah. That's,
you know,
a shame.
The next thing he did was tell me how senior he was in his company, but he mentioned the word senior 5 times in one paragraph.
Oh no.
I feel sick.
Sorry.
You get that in so many times. Like, that's... I'm like, senior. Okay?
That's a really weird thing to say. Why wouldn't you just say your role rather than saying that you're senior? And like, once you said it once, like, yeah, I get it. And even if I don't, I can look that up on LinkedIn.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's fucking weird.
My response was, that sounds very ... senior. And then literally the next day he responded back, very senior. And then he didn't respond back for 2 days. And then he responded to all my questions after that. And I was like,
God.
So he thought it was a joke. He thought it was like a good joke.
See, but you need someone who can hold a conversation with you.
Like, what was that?
Do you know what,
guys?
I mean? Like, that's just so dry. Like, he sounds hella dry.
Yeah.
Raj, you said you're not ready though. So what are you doing? Just get off.
I thought a test was.
I understand.
I mean, you tested and this is what's happened.
This is the sign you've been waiting for.
Yeah, this is it. Yeah, this is it. This is it.
This is a sign that things are quite dry out there. Also, my friend is like, she says, having been on dating apps a few times, that this pre-Christmas period is not a good time. It's usually...
Oh my God, okay, I did not know that.
See, it's usually after everyone's been depressed, being alone at Christmas, they go on the dating apps in January as like a new year, new start type of vibe.
So is January a good time?
No, I think they're inundated because it's like people have had conversations, haven't they? And they're
come
on,
exactly.
Get it together.
Get it together.
I feel like summer's a good vibe, you know? You're going to get the best of people, hopefully.
Summer is always a good vibe. But she said also the worst time to be on is obviously in February because that's when everyone's trying to...
Oh, no.
Everyone's
okay. I would definitely avoid 100%.
March.
I was going to go on it anyway. I've been feeling very low, so I'm not going.
We can go back in March.
Yeah, you've got to be in the right headspace.
Ladies, when did it change for you and when did you start to realise that women of colour are beautiful?
Like I said, I think I always knew and I was always told this, and not just in a you're beautiful kind of way, but my mum made a real like point of making sure that I understood that from a black women in general perspective. But I think I felt it when I went to university, and I went to university in Bristol. And there was a hell of a lot of black men there, and suddenly people could see me. And yeah. I realised, oh, actually, this is going to work out fine.
Yeah.
I don't think my experience is the same in terms of like going to university and then all of a sudden having a lot of attention. I don't ever think I felt like I had a lot of attention that way, but I will say that for me, it was going online and on Instagram in particular, because I feel like doing fashion blogging and like starting that side of like my life meant that I was finding people who I hadn't necessarily seen in the mainstream. I was really into magazines when I was growing up, so that very toxic side of media consumption was like huge for me as like a teenager, whereas in my 20s, mid-20s, late-20s, I was on Instagram, so I was seeing all these incredible Black women, Asian women, plus size women, like disabled women. It was like women across the spectrum kind of shown to me. And again, I could see how smart, intelligent, fashionable, like stylish, cool, like, and beautiful they were. So that was when it changed for me. Like, I was immediately shown all of these people that I wouldn't necessarily have come across in my day-to-day life, especially growing up in Virginia. So that was cool. That was really nice.
Amazing.
And Emma, what are you saying thank you next to?
Thank you next to the idea that we girls of colour are not beautiful.
Thanks, butter. Next.
So we're on the third lesson, and this one is coming from Nicole, who is going to love us and leave us. It's going to be a quick one. So one taught me
that nobody can tell me about me but me.
Tell us what you mean by that.
So I will say that growing up, I always struggled with people trying to kind of foist my own identity onto me. So, you know, people telling me that I act white, or telling me that I'm not Black enough, or that I couldn't be Asian because I'm Black, all of those things. And I used to really tie myself up in knots trying to prove to people, no, I am this. No, I actually, you know, here are my credentials. And I would really get really wrapped up in that. You know, since starting the podcast and hearing so many people struggling with the same thing, since meeting Emma and like being really honest and like vulnerable with each other about how, you know, we grew up, that really helped me understand so much more about myself. And these incredible conversations we've had on the podcast have made me really get to grips with who I am and understand that nobody gets to dictate to me, you know, what my identity is. You know, nobody gets to tell me that I'm not Black enough or that I'm only mixed. I get to be as multifaceted, you know, as a multifaceted human as I want to be, because that's just who I am. So yeah, that's it.
Emma, have you ever been like in that situation where someone's tried to tell you about you and about who you are?
Yeah, I would say that it happens like directly and indirectly fairly often, because even in just the way people react to you talking about certain things, they try to tell you about who you are. I feel like when me and Nicole first started this podcast, we also had this experience of like trying to approach certain publications, for example, as an example, who look after Black content, but we were rejected. And even though that's not somebody telling you who you are, for me, it is someone telling me who I am, because they're telling me you're not enough of what I'm looking for this publication.
Yeah.
I know what we do is incredible and what we have to say is really valid and important and has served so many people. You know, we get messages every week from people, you know, from 16-year-olds, 14-year-olds, right up to like 50-year-olds who are like, I've been waiting for this my entire life. So I know it's not that. I know it's because I don't fit the mold of what they see as the representation, I guess, of Blackness that they want to portray, as an example. But yeah, I feel like people always do this thing where they like correct you. So like you'll say, da da da, I'm Black. And then they'll later on say mixed or whatever it is that they want to bring into the equation, when actually we're probably being quite purposeful about how we're positioning ourselves in any given environment. And like I said, I think that's our right to do so. It so happens that we are, in fact, multi-heritage, mixed race. So we can claim whichever 100%. Facet of our identity we want to at any time, in my opinion.
Raj, have you ever had anybody questioning your brownness?
All the time, standard, especially, you know, I mean, before, I feel like I was very much into Bollywood. Everyone knows I can speak the languages and do all of that. But then it's like my interest in American movies, British pop culture. Like, I know everything about anything, just put it that way. Like, so I watch everything.
You're a geek, aren't you?
Yeah. A song will be on the radio and I'll know all the words and stuff. And I'll know all the lyrics. And like, you know, that's the shit I geek out on. That's the shit I love. And even theatre, theatre's a weird thing, I think, for a brown person to like, despite the fact that it crosses over with Bollywood. For God's sakes, Bollywood is musicals. That's all it is. But anyway, people don't really get that. And I always feel like I'm different. I'm always made to feel like I'm different. And I'm always made to feel like I'm different because when I think about things, I think about mainstream things. Maybe I don't think about like the niche things or, you know, and I think that's something as well. We, even with this podcast, like we don't think we're doing something that's niche. We don't think we're catering to a niche audience. We think anyone can listen to this podcast. And
of course,
when we were working on it as well, I think our ideas for it were very mainstream and like we wanted to be in mainstream places. And like, you know, thankfully we've got into a few of them, but like there's a lot of places where I would have thought where we're at now, that exactly like what you're saying, where we would have been, but we're kind of not, because our narrative isn't, oh, we are brown girls that were held back about being brown, and being in the UK has helped us to, you know, I don't know, be free and express ourselves freely. That's not our narrative. Like we don't come from that kind of a background or anything. And I think that's where sometimes I'm kind of like, I've always felt different throughout my life. But even now it's like, this is a, I say this to Hardeep all the time. I feel like this is like a glass ceiling that we have to shatter now.
Oh my gosh. It's a good way of putting it. I feel very similar. I feel like to your point about this person saying that they were senior. Whilst that was extremely jarring, I'm now going to like start talking about being senior. But you know, when
at least you warned us.
Yeah, I warned you. You know, when you get to a certain place in your career and it's almost unavoidable, the constant pushback.
Yeah.
You know, you just can't bob and weave it anymore. And it's just, it's almost a physical reaction to you being in certain spaces, perhaps where people wouldn't have expected you, that feels quite different. So that glass ceiling thing really speaks to me.
Yeah. And it's that thing of like, I feel like people still don't understand so much about being mixed race. Like there's so many things that they just don't get. And I've had so many conversations like amongst my black friends, amongst my non-black friends. There's not one story. There's not one narrative. Everyone has a different take on everything. So it's just like, whoa, like,
yeah,
but no one, you're right, no one's actually sitting down and asking a mixed race person to speak on
nobody it. Ever asks us what we think, like,
yeah,
obviously that's why we kind of started this, because we felt it was time for us to have a voice. Usually it's people commenting on what they think, and you know, there's lots of like tropes and stereotypes about mixed girls, especially like whether it be like them being confused or them being easy or them being this or that, but no one ever like had stopped to sit down and say, okay, well, where are these tropes coming from, and like what is actually the spectrum of experience of being mixed? And I think only people are now just starting to realize in UK, people in the UK have thought for a long time being mixed is being black and white. When, of course, that's...
You know what? I've got to be honest, right? So like, I remember having the conversation when Amber... Hardeep, do you remember when Amber Gill won Love Island? Right? Yeah. And it was just that thing of... So she's mixed race. And I was like, this is the first black woman to win Love Island. And my friend was like, no, it depends on what she identifies as. And I was so like, what? Like, but...
What? Is she half white?
Yeah.
She's mixed black and white. Yeah, but yeah, it's true. And I just think, you know, like with everything, people need to start leaning into the conversations. And the more conversation we have, the more dialogue we have, the more comfortable it would be for everybody. I think the first step is probably accepting that there's a conversation to be had. And hopefully we've gone some way to kind of make that clear.
No, 100%. And the fact that you guys are there, I think it's definitely like a very important conversation to have. And you are going to probably break that glass ceiling.
Fingers crossed, eh?
Yeah. I mean, you're senior. No, I'm just...
Yeah, you're senior. Fucking
you're senior,
hell.
So you got...
Shit, son. I'm so senior. It's unreal.
Write that in your LinkedIn if it's not already.
Oh, yeah, God, that may be my new... That may be my new, like, Instagram, title as well.
That word makes me want to puke.
I hated it, guys. Yeah. I was so triggered. I was telling my housemate. She was like, there's nothing wrong with that. And I was like, no, wrong with?
There's everything wrong with it.
I just don't understand why that would enter a dating conversation in that way.
I just like people who are humble. Do you know what I mean? Like, even about our jobs, I know what we do is really cool and we're very privileged. So I'm just not going to throw it in anyone's face. You know what I mean? If I'm happy, I'm happy and that's it.
Exactly. So what are you saying thank you next to?
Thank you next to letting other people tell me about me.
Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast, ladies. Where can people find you online and find out more about the podcast?
Well, we're on all podcasting platforms, so Apple, Spotify, Acast, all of your favorite podcasting places. But we are also on Instagram ourselves. I'm at M. Slade Edmondson and Nicole is at Nicola Cran. And we also have a book coming out called The Half of It.
Yeah.
Which is, yeah, it's kind of, you know, off the back of the podcast, really, it's talking about the mixed race experience. It's got lots of excerpts from other people and about their lived experiences and just covers a lot of topics. So like everything from like the history of mixed people to adoption to, you know, beauty standards and that kind of thing. Some of the things we've started to touch on today. And yes, it's got a lot in it. And I'm really excited for people to receive it.
And it's out in March.
It's out in March 23. But it is available to pre-order.
Wow.
It's a big meaty, it's a really meaty project. So that is why we've needed time, basically.
Definitely.
It is available for pre-order still. Pre-order is really, really important for new authors as well. So
all right.
If you like it, then you like the sound of it, then definitely go and pre-order.
Pre-order. And you can do that in your link in bio on Instagram, can't you?
You can, yes.
Look at that. Set up, ready to go.
Look at that. All right. Well, we'll have to get you back on in
2023. Yeah, we'd love that. Please.
Send us a copy of the book. Signed one.
Yeah, of course. Of course.
Yeah. I want you to sign it senior. Da, 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 da.
The most this senior. Is never going to go.
Yeah, 100%. Thanks for listening to this episode of Thank You Next. Make sure you share this episode with someone who's very confused about what mixed race means.
You could also send this episode to somebody who is getting a lot of opinions from other people telling them who they are, but really it's like, shut up, mind your business.
Yeah, I know who I am.
Oh, send it to the person at school who pawed you off because they didn't think you were beautiful, but now they've got a brown thing.
If you have something to say about today's episode or you want to give us a heads up about what you think we should do for our Christmas episode, please send us a voice note or send us an email at hithankyounextpodcast@gmail.com, or you can DM us on the socials. We're Thank You Next Pod on Insta, TikTok and Twitter.
And if you like what you heard, make sure you hit subscribe or follow on Acast, Spotify, Apple or wherever you listen to your podcast. And do not forget to leave us a review, basically so other people can find us and bond with us and be our friends and listen to our great content. You know, sharing is caring and all that.
And you know, our Christmas episodes are always really good, so you want to get them onto the podcast before our Christmas episode drops. You know what I mean?
You know what I mean? I mean, Raj is saying our Christmas episodes are always good. We've had one episode and we don't know what we're doing for this one, but we know it's going to be good. So.
The holiday episode was pristine, and now this Christmas you can re-listen to the holiday episode and the new one. Whoa.
There you go.
Whoa.
Bang, bang.
Bang, bang. We'll be back next week with more shit we want to say thank you next to. For now, let me leave you with this thought. We're saying thank you next to men who feel the need to tell you that they're senior 5 times in a conversation on Hinge. I don't care. Why aren't you asking me anything about myself? I have a cooler job than you.
Okay. And that's that, really.
Are you not going to say thank you next or something?
Maybe they really wanted you to know how senior they are.
Oh,
Reg.
Whatever. Like, what am I going to do
if
with
you're that?
That
senior? What? Actually, I was in a room earlier this week with somebody who kept talking about how senior they were, but they weren't saying it like, I'm senior. They were just alluding to it. And I was like, this is boring. So stop, please.
This is what are you going to do with that information? Like, and also we're literally at the beginning of a talking stage. What's wrong with, you're not even going to get a talking stage out of this. Do you know what I mean? I'm not going to get a talking stage.
I think that's what you should reply. You should say, you're not going to get a talking stage out of this.
I'm just going to unmatch him, man. Forget it. Anyway.
See you later, guys.
Bye. Thank you.
Next.